Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Sankofa Radio, where we travel to the past before we stop in the present on our journey into the future. I'm your host, Ascari Donso, and today, man, I'm gonna do a little something special, man. I'm gonna talk about the Queen Madison Carter from NBC 29 Charlottesville News. I'm gonna talk about the parole report she did, the 3-day report she did. Explain a little bit about truth and sentencing. I'm gonna come from a prisoner perspective and a New African perspective, though, to give some of the activists out there, some of you may not be as knowledgeable about truth and sentencing, a whole different perspective to look at it. Before I do it, you know, it's always customary that we start our shows off with a dedication, and today we want to give a special dedication to the brother Walter Rodney. Walter Rodney, man, was a African revolutionary. He's from Guyana. He was an activist. He was an educator. Walter Rodney taught us the importance of understanding how European colonial invasions impacted African people throughout the diaspora and how it contributed to our oppression. And Walter Rodney's consciousness, his theory, his ideas are very important in how we understand truth and sentencing today. And I'm going to make them connections as we go further. But so moving forward, man, let's get into this. What is truth and sentencing, right? So truth and sentencing, in essence, is a social control formation. It's a public policy designed, as they say, for crime control. It's a method by which the state uses to be able to control the criminal and be able to basically regulate how long the criminal stays in prison, whether or not the criminal is a threat to public safety. And the orchestrators of this crime policy is said to be the state, but we know that behind the scenes, as always, the orchestrators of public policy are people who can lobby politicians to be able to create laws in their interest. So what I want to do is I want to talk a little bit about the history of truth and sentencing, where it comes from, right? And so I want to say that in order for us to be able to thoroughly understand truth and sentencing, we have to have an understanding of the drug wars, or as they dub it, the war on drugs, right? And so the war on drugs, the impact that the war on drugs has on the African-American community actually begins in the 60s with the CIA collaboration with the Hmong tribesmen in Vietnam, when they basically allowed them to ship heroin into the United States so that they can control borders or areas that were once controlled by communists to be able to smuggle arms into Vietnam. What this does is this allows for them to be able to control these territories in exchange for allowing the Hmong tribesmen to get their drugs into America. Now, this disproportionately impacts African communities in the 60s. What we see is a rise in black crime. We see the creation of this concept or this idea known as black-on-black crime, and we begin to see black people begin to support tough-on-crime measures. So when we move into the 1970s, right, Richard Nixon, he declares a war on drugs, and what Richard Nixon's focus is at the time is he's focusing on, as he claims, people in the military who are using marijuana, and it is affecting the way that they perform in war, you know, in wartime. And what this does is this causes him to increase the amount of border patrol in the southern border region, in the southwestern portion of America, the Mexican border, to prevent the increase of marijuana coming into the country. Well, the consequence of that is that in urban communities where at the same time they're stopping the amount of marijuana and hashish that's entering urban communities, you're also seeing an increase in an influx of heroin being filtered in through the CIA. So we see a heroin epidemic developing in the 70s. And we're seeing, if you look at movies like American Gangster, we're seeing that people like Nicky Barnes and Frank Lucas, with the help of the CIA and the what we like to call the National Political Police, the FBI, are allowing these brothers to bring drugs in. I don't even know if I'm calling them, brothers because they were traitors, but bring drugs into the community under the auspices of the military, right? So if you look at the movie, when you see drugs coming in through drug caskets, the movie doesn't go into detail the FBI and the CIA's complicity in that, but they're complicit in that. So moving into the 80s, what we begin to see now is we begin to see that the CIA, who is the international political police, if the FBI is the domestic political police, we see the CIA being involved in South American resistance struggles. After Vietnam, after World War II, around the world, what you begin to see is communist and socialist movements sprout up all over the world. They're beginning to challenge their condition. They're beginning to challenge imperialism. And this is happening in a broad way down in South America. You see this happening in El Salvador. You see this happening in Nicaragua. You see this happening in Guatemala. And what the CIA is doing is they're going into these areas and they're training soldiers on how to fight resistance movement. They're picking people out and creating opposition groups. Well, in picking these opposition groups, you know, they have to finance these groups. And so in the 80s, in the early 80s, when Reagan gets elected, immediately the federal government says, look, we're no longer going to finance these covert operations. So what they have to do is they have to find a way to finance these operations. So what Oliver North and William Casey, Oliver North was the CIA director at the time, and William Casey was the national security advisor to Ronald Reagan. What they do at the behest of Ronald Reagan, under his instruction, is they begin to ship weapons into the Contras, and at the same time, they're allowing them to smuggle cocaine into L.A. And the person that they're smuggling cocaine into to distribute the cocaine is the brother Freeway Ricky Ross. So Freeway Ricky Ross in L.A. at the time is being able to sell cocaine essentially with impunity. And he's giving drugs to the Bloods and the Crips, who are further spreading cocaine all throughout America, and it's spreading all the way over here to the East Coast. And so me being from Lynchburg, Virginia, we begin to see crack cocaine coming into our community around 87, 88. Richmond is beginning to see it around 85, 86. And all of this is because of Ronald Reagan, Oliver North, and William Casey, who nobody knew at the time, had this secret covert drug war that they were financing this covert operation down in Nicaragua. But this was part of an overall strategy to attack communism, going back to the end of the Civil War. This is why we got to keep in mind LBJ's involvement and the CIA's involvement in the heroin epidemic in the 60s. It all interconnects. So now what we have is once this drug epidemic is produced by the government, to get some control and gain some control over it, what they do is they begin to create crime control legislation, supposedly, to fight it. This is the war on drugs, right? So here in America, what they do in 1984, they create what they call the Comprehensive Crime Control Act. Okay, and the Comprehensive Crime Control Act, you know, that gives you 5 years mandatory minimum sentence if you carry a gun in the midst of a drug crime or a violent crime. And then they come back and they create that same year, the 1984 Sentencing Reform Act. Now, this is where truth in sentencing is established, right? In the Sentencing Reform Act, what they do is they abolish parole, they establish 85%, and they create the United States Sentencing Commission. Okay, so what we see is a deliberate attempt to target urban communities where crack cocaine has been spread at the behest of Ronald Reagan, where this epidemic has been produced by Ronald Reagan. Now they're turning around, creating a military-style response, and creating the prison, a mass prison system to incarcerate the people that they just poisoned with these drugs. So now in 1986, right, they come with the Anti-Drug Abuse Act. In the Anti-Drug Abuse Act of 1986, this changes the ratio, the punishment ratio from crack and powder cocaine from 100 to 1. So now it's a specific target on crack cocaine, which is really hitting urban communities. So we see the link right here between punishment, mass incarceration, and crack cocaine, right? And again, this crack cocaine epidemic was created by Ronald Reagan and the CIA and the FBI. So then you go into 1988, and we see the Omnibus Anti-Drug Abuse Act, which gives you 5-year mandatory minimum possession for crack. So we see a decade in the 80s of creating a drug war, creating a drug epidemic, launching a drug war on an epidemic you created, and then attacking urban communities through these crime control policies. And the primary policy that they're using is truth in sentencing, because they're trying to lock you up and throw away the key. Okay, so now they're feeling real good about by the early 90s, they're feeling real good about the fact that they've been able to gain some control over these urban areas who they consider to be threat populations in the United States at the time. But something happens that nobody can predict. Rodney King happens, and there's tension all over the country, because on TV we're seeing a racist police brutality beating. We're seeing 4 white police beat a black man. A year later, these 4 police are acquitted, and you have the Watts riots. And the Watts riots are particularly worrisome to the government and white Americans, because a few things happen. First and foremost, you see blacks in particular rioting in the street, and they're targeting and attacking white people specifically. Well, even more important, one of the most important things that happened that a lot of people forget or overlook is that the Bloods and the Crips launched a truce at this time. And them launching a truce at this time brought into the white ethos a certain fear that, okay, the resistance movements in the 60s that they fought so hard to quell through the drug wars may be coming back into fruition. Here we have the Bloods and the Crips, who were allowed to function in the 80s to create this drug war, now coming into a certain political consciousness as a result of the Rodney King beating. So the fear now in 1992, because of the riots, is implemented in not only white America, who really doesn't understand what's going on in these communities, but even furthermore, the elites behind the government, who see, okay, we may have a potential problem with a new resistance movement. So what happens is Bill Clinton is elected the next year in 93. And Bill Clinton wants to prove that he can be a tough on crime, and he wants to prove that he's in alignment with the tough on crime policies of the 80s, because this is what's getting Republicans elected year after year. And white America is nervous about the violence in black communities, what they're seeing on TV. So he gets elected in 93. He's inaugurated in 94. Immediately in 94, he implements the Violent Crime Control and Law Enforcement Act, which is known as the Crime Bill. And what does this do? This incentivizes every single state in the country to adopt truth in sentencing. Okay, so what Bill Clinton has just done is Bill Clinton has said, okay, we recognize that there's a black resistance movement rising. We see that black resistance in urban areas as a result of people becoming conscious of the crack cocaine epidemic and what is going on, because we have Gary Webb in the early 90s exposing what Ronald Reagan has done. So the consciousness is coming into play of us black Americans that, oh, snap, they poisoned us, they called us sick. And so the response is we have to find ways to be able to control a potential resistance movement. So that is the initial function of truth in sentencing for Bill Clinton. Okay, so you have him saying that, you know, you have this violent crime taking place in urban areas. You have super predators being created. But really that's code language for we afraid of all these blacks in these areas who have guns, who may become conscious, who may begin not to see each other as the enemy, but who may begin to target those who put the drugs in their community as the enemy. Okay, so this is the function of truth and sentencing in the early stages of 1994. So now when we get to 1995, Governor George Allen, a Republican, with a Republican General Assembly, he adopts the truth and sentencing laws. Now, we have to make a connection between the truth and sentencing laws in Virginia and the international struggle, right, the international struggle to quell resistance movements. And this is why I really want people to understand that truth and sentencing is more than just a public safety. All of that is code language, a public safety policy. Truth in sentencing has its roots in targeting resistance movements, right? So let's think about the FBI for a implemented COINTELPRO. What the goal of COINTELPRO was, after initially COINTELPRO was designed to attack the Communist Party, but as the Communist Party began to lose its effectiveness in the 50s, they immediately began to attack black groups, because in the 50s you begin to see the origin of the civil rights movement. And you have J. Edgar Hoover saying, look, man, the goal of the COINTELPRO, this is internally, is to prevent the rise of a black messiah. And initially his first three targets are Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, and Stokely Carmichael. Well, after he effectively neutralized these three guys, right, Malcolm X is killed in 1965, Martin Luther King is killed in 1968, and Stokely Carmichael is bad jacketed and forced out of the country in the early 70s. Once he neutralized these guys, he turns his target into what he called the greatest threat to the internal security of the United States, the Black Panther Party. So how does he neutralize the Black Panther Party? Well, the first thing he does is he creates dissension amongst the Black Panther Party, which is how they fall into two fractured groups, the East and the West Coast. But the primary thing that he does is he uses drugs, right? So Huey P. Newton is targeted specifically a part of an FBI drug campaign being filtered in by agents who are all around him, who have been infiltrating the Black Panther Party specifically to filter him drugs. And so when we get to the urban unrest in the 90s, what they see is, oh, snap, we have a potential resurrection of the Black Revolution. And so Truth and Citizen is particularly elevated from just being a federal policy to a state policy. Every single state, we need y'all to get on deck, because what's on national TV, people are beginning to see the riots, people are beginning to see the resistance, it's in hip-hop, it's a lot of factors, okay? So when it's Virginia sees multiple reasons why they want to get involved in this. Of course, they want to be able to control the African-American black surplus male population, who they are already making more and more desperate and depressed through the way they oppress us in education, healthcare, and economically. But they also see a dual benefit of profits, right? When they first created Truth and Citizen in Virginia, they began to create super maximum security prisons, but they didn't have the prisoners for them. Even though they lied to the public, they knew they didn't have prisoners for them. There was only 19,000 prisoners in the state of Virginia at the time. So what did they do? Well, what they did was they went to other states and rented other prisoners. The goal of doing that was to be able to increase the profits of the state's government. So Wallace Ridge was operating at 60-70% out-of-state prisoner. Red Onion was operating at 50% out-of-state prisoner, because they didn't have the prisoners in Virginia to put them in there. Sussex, too, was operating at about 90% out-of-state prisoner. You even had prisoners at the older prisons, Greensville, and so forth and so on. So that was one of the functions. And then at the same time, you have, going into the early 2000s, Mark Warner bringing private companies into the prison. So Virginia, and this is a Democrat, let's be very clear, just like Bill Clinton was a Democrat. So what we have is the goal of increasing the profits of the state through the prison industrial complex being developed. We also have the dual goal of controlling the surplus population. Right now, in the late 90s, we're starting to see that blacks are being affected by poverty and race that they haven't been in the last 25 years, and so they're having to figure out a way, how do we control these black populations? Well, we lock them up. Prisons become the new public housing. And then lastly, the most underrepresented goal was local economic development out here in the Western region. So what they was able to do was see poor whites in the Western region who had no job skills, who were not able to contribute to the global economy. They created these industries. Since 1995, they have developed Red Onion State Prison, Wallace Ridge State Prison, River North, Pocahontas, and Green Rock, all in the Western region. These prisons bring in $10 million annually at minimum to these economies. These are economies that were depressed. These were economies that had no economic activity. So these are the functions of Truth and Citizen in Virginia from 95 up until now. And so we see a 100% increase in the prison population as a result of Truth and Citizen. It goes from 18,000 in 1994 to, by the early 2000s, 2007, you have 38,000 prisoners in the state of Virginia. Okay? Now, what I'm going to do right here is I'm going to take a little bit of a break. I'm going to play some music. I'm going to let you think about what I just said, and then I'm going to come back on the other side, and I'm going to wrap up a little bit about the Democratic Party, the neoliberals, their complicity in Truth and Citizen, and why it is that we have to hold this party accountable, to the people. You know, we put them in office. We're going to talk about that on the other end. Peace.
One time, yeah. Yo, all I need is one mic, one beat, one stage, one nigga front, my face on the front page. Only if I had one gun, one girl and one crib, one God to show me how to do things as son did. Pure, like a cup of virgin blood, mixed with 151, one sip will make a nigga flip. Writing names on my hollow tips, plotting shit, mad violence, who I'm gon' body, this hood politics, acknowledge it. Leave bodies chopped up in garbages, seeds watch us, grow up and try to follow us, police watch us, roll up and try knocking us. One knee I duck, could it be my time is up? With my luck, I got up, the cops shot again. Bust stop glass burst, a fiend drops his Heineken. Ricocheting between the spots that I'm hiding in. Blacking out, I shoot back, fuck getting hit. This is my hood, I'm a rep to the death of it. To everybody, come on, little niggas is grown. Look rats, don't abortion your wound. We need more warriors soon. Sit from the stars, sun and the moon. And it's like a police chase, the street sweepers and coppers. Stick up kids with no conscience, leaving victims with doctors. If you really think you ready to die, when nine's out, this is what nine's about, nigga, the time is now.
All I need is one mic. All I need is one mic. All I need, niggas. All I need.
Peace. Okay, so I'm running out of time, so I want to get immediately into it. So, the Queen Madison College did a great job with her report. Let's be very clear. We really appreciate the system for being a voice for us. We felt very, very encouraged by her words and the research that she put into play. But I got to speak for the prisoner. A lot of us were a little bit disappointed with Ralph Northam, not because we believe that he is, we know he's neoliberal. But what we expected was that Northam would understand that there's a mandate being placed on him by the people. See, the people are no longer going to allow the neoliberals to pretend that they represent us when we know that they represent the corporations. He was elected by the people. Now, when you think about the Democratic Party, we have to understand that Truth in Sentencing, as far as it being a state program, was created or implemented, rather, by the Democratic Party. It was implemented by Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton and his wife, Hillary Clinton, launched a major public relations campaign where they identified urban black people as domestic terrorists and super predators, and they went on further to change how it is that the prison system is regulated. They gave money away to states, including Virginia, to build mass build prisons, to militarize the prison, the police forces, and so the Democratic Party was complicit in that. A lot of people today who are seen as heroes in the progressive movement were complicit in creating Truth in Sentencing. Eric Holder was a proponent of Truth in Sentencing. Bernie Sanders was a proponent of Truth in Sentencing. Joe Biden, you know what I'm saying? So we have to know that Truth in Sentencing was not just a Republican initiative, but in fact it was contributed by Democrats en masse. Okay, so now we have to ask ourselves the question then, if Democrats helped implement Truth in Sentencing in Virginia, then how do we get to the point where there's massive resistance to mass incarceration by the Democratic Party? Well, this begins with Barack Obama. And so initially when Barack Obama was elected, we know that Barack Obama was not a fan of speaking about black issues. In fact, he was very reluctant to speak about black issues for the first few years of his term. And then randomly, sort of like Rodney King, out of nowhere, Trayvon Martin is killed. And when Trayvon Martin is killed, it creates a resistance throughout America. People are protesting Trayvon's murder all over the country. And so Obama, feeling compelled by black leadership because so many people are in the streets, he has to speak on it. So he comes on the White House lawn and he says that if he had a son, he'd look like Trayvon. And so, immediately after that, there's a succession of murders of unarmed black men, and it's being caught on videotape. You have Walter Scott being shot in the back in North Carolina. You got Jordan Davis down in Florida being shot. You got Mike Brown being shot and his body left in the street for 9 hours. You got Eric Garner being choked out on YouTube. You got all of these things happening, and it's contributing to Obama having to get more and more involved in African-American issues because the African-American community and their white allies are in massive resistance throughout the country. So he has no ability to sit back anymore and act as if he don't want to speak on these issues. And so what this does is this forces him to come up with a solution. Well, the neoliberals in the Democratic Party, their solution was body cameras. You know, we need body cameras, you know. It was the people, it was Black Lives Matter, it was the urban local groups who came up and said, no, hell no, we don't need body cameras, we need criminal justice reform. And it was the message of the people who made Barack Obama and the Democratic Party say, okay, we got to start looking at this prison system. But they already knew what they created. So Barack Obama, he becomes ultimately the first president in American history to visit a U.S. prison. This is in 2015. At the same time, he's creating he's going there. Governor McCullough is in Virginia creating Executive Order 44, the Parole Review Commission. And what the Parole Review Commission mission is they're supposed to review parole in Virginia, truth in sentencing, okay? So all of this is happening as a result of resistance movements. And from 2012 all the way up into 2015, some close to 25 people, unarmed black men, were killed right here in Virginia, shot by police. See, that's an unknown fact right there. But see, people are dying in jails. People are being choked out in jails in Portsmouth. People being shot and killed in Richmond. People being shot and killed in Virginia Beach and Roanoke. And a lot of people in Buckingham County. So there's a need or a desire by the Democratic Party to show that they have compassion, that they're in alignment with the national mission. So Executive Order 44 comes out. Okay, and so the Democratic Party, when Hillary Clinton is running for office, they put ending mass incarceration on the national platform, and so they're, you know, because they're trying to get the Obama coalition to come out and vote for them, a la blacks, okay, so they have to appease. So Hillary Clinton is sitting with the mothers of the movement. Who are the mothers of the movement? The mothers of guys who have been killed by the police. And she's also having meetings with Black Lives Matter. You have Black Lives Matter raiding Bernie Sanders and her campaigns when they go out to do speeches, and they happen to address the issue of mass incarceration. So the response to that is that they put mass incarceration on the national platform. That was not a Democratic initiative. That was the people forcing them to put mass incarceration on the national platform. So now when we get to Virginia in the gubernatorial election, what we have as a contrast to Ralph Northam is Tom Perriello. And Tom Perriello, feeding off the Bernie Sanders momentum, feeding off the grassroots momentum, puts Virginia's criminal justice system on test. He argues in the debate that Virginia is a new Jim Crow state. He says Virginia's criminal justice system is racist, and so Ralph Northam is forced to have to deal with the criminal justice issue. So he says in a debate that, you know, he believes in criminal justice reform. And so he, once again, is able to persuade people under this initiative to vote for him. So what he says, bringing it back to the Queen Madison Carter's report, that he does not support ending truth in sentencing, that we will be going backwards, that is coded language for that he is in alignment with the same neoliberal policies that got us in this mess in the first place. And this is where the people have to continue to rise up and challenge him. So what do we do? First thing we have to do is attend this rally on January the 20th in Richmond. And we have to make our voices heard. We have to let the people know that criminal justice reform is not a request. Ending truth in sentencing is not a request. You was elected because of us. You do not have to have the support of us, and your party does not have to have the support of us. That's number one. Number two is we have to get with our local officials and make sure they understand that this is what we want. We have to demonstrate. We have to organize. We have to write. We have to be active and loud and letting them know that the truth in sentencing days are over. Again, this is not a request. This is a demand. We want criminal justice reform. We hip to y'all. We know that it's rooted in racist policy that you all created, and we will no longer stand by and take it. This is not a request. That's number two. Number three is we have to become educated and informed about alternatives to truth in sentencing, and we have to also make people know that truth in sentencing is impacting the black community in a disproportionate way. This truth in sentencing is impacting our communities in a way unlike any other group in Virginia. Right now, currently, there are close to 65% of the prison system is African-American. At the same time that you have 65% of the prison system being African-American, 71% of the people in probation and parole are white. So what we see is that not only are, and what that correlates to is that not only are blacks being placed in prison in larger numbers, but blacks are serving more time. Whites are having the opportunity to get out. You know what I mean? So all of these things are impacting our family structure, our communities, people being able to contribute. Our labor power is being exploited in the prison to keep the prison open. Meanwhile, white communities aren't getting the aid of the state by having prisons put in their communities. So we have to call this racist policy into question. And Ralph Northam making a statement that we will be going backwards is him being complicit in this racist policy. And with that being said, I'm running out of time. With that being said, you know, Yahuru, get involved. check on in mass incarceration in Virginia. Continue to follow me on Scarlett Dawn, so there'll be more follow up. Fight, bang.
Yo, all I need is one mic, one beat, one stage.